comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. It's all right. Here comes the sun.
Everybody. Thank you, Nina Simone. This is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Frontlines, your national movement building show. I'm in studio with Channing Martinez, as always, our producer. And we are happy to talk to you this week, next week, and the week after in a sort of a series of integrated shows. We have two interrelated themes. The primary theme is going to be the 25th anniversary of the L.A. Urban Rebellion, which happened actually on April 29th, 1992. Today, we're going to focus on a positive response to the 25th anniversary and also the 52nd anniversary, which I'll discuss, of the L.A. Watts Rebellion of 1965. Very tragic about Black people rising up, the system, at least initially, acting like it had some concern, and virtually every single positive proposal never came into being or came into being and quickly was withdrawn. But the negative proposals about unemployment and police occupation and basically the subjugation of the Black nation have continued and even continued on steroids. So we have something positive because this is Voices from the Frontlines, your national movement building show. So we're going to focus on today the Labor Community Strategy Center and the Fight for the Soul of the City's Civil Rights and Climate Justice Campaign. And I'm going to relate that to the two rebellions because these are six, we think, very exciting demands that you, our listeners on KPFK Voices from the Frontlines, could help us with. I think you know that the listeners generally on the show have been pretty wonderful. When I go to the phones, which we will today again, and if I talk about the film Neruda, if I talk about the film Il Postino, also about the communist Pablo Neruda, the response is amazing. If I talk about Trayvon Martin, the listeners on this show are pretty wonderful. I don't even have to say, please get to the point. People just know how to get to the point. And people have important things to say. I think you know there's even, for me and Channing, a growing affection developing between us as the hosts of the show and you as the listeners to Voices from the Frontlines. But we need to sort of step up because we really need your help on this campaign. So let me tell you the six demands first. Then I'm going to take a step back in history, and then we'll move forward again. I also want to tell you about two other shows we're going to do in sequence. But let me start with the six demands so that we'll frame where your mind is going. First, these are all six demands on the Los Angeles MTA that now has a $7 billion budget that can do all the things we're asking and more. The first is free public transportation. MTA cannot charge $100 for monthly bus pass and 24 student pass with a $5 billion budget, 4 half-cent sales tax, and a ridership that is 20% Black, 55% Latino, 60% women, and profoundly poor. Free public transportation will dramatically expand public transit ridership and dramatically reduce auto use.
Stop MTA's systematic attacks on Black passengers. no arrests, no citations, no fines, or MTA transit court for passengers who do not or cannot pay their fares. MTA policies give more than 50% of all citations and arrests to black passengers, represent egregious racial profiling and transit racism. MTA must cut its police by 50%, at least 50%. The recent decision by the MTA board to dramatically expand its police budget to $790 million and create a massive force to MTA fare checkers, LAPD, Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, Long Beach Police is an aggressive police state on public transportation. We must decriminalize public transportation now.
MTA must buy 5,000 zero-emission electric buses, beginning with 1,000 new electric buses now. MTA must stop any future compressed natural gas bus purchases. MTS must restore 1 million hours of bus service won by the Strategy Center and Bus Riders Union, cut by the MTA since 2006. And the MTA must stop discrimination and retaliation against the Strategy Center for fighting for passengers' civil and human rights. So we need you to sign up to this campaign. If you go on www.fightforthesoulofthecities, there is a button where you can click on there and join the campaign. And if you go on our website, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com, we'll also send out a bulletin to that effect. All right, we're going to come back to these demands and elaborate these demands and talk to you about it, but we're going to take a couple of steps back for a minute and forward.
Yes, this is the ghetto. Showing up now.
So the first thing I want to talk to you about is that the next two shows, we're going to do two shows in a row about the subject of communism and why we think that communism is a component that's missing from today's movement and needs to be re-injected into it. I don't advocate at this point the building of a communist party. I don't think that's the central task, but that's not really the point. I am arguing not just for a pro-communist orientation to the movement, but to re-understand the critical role that communists and communism has played in building a left and how a lot of those elements have to be reintegrated into today's movement. So this is going to be a sort of a two-part series on communism. The first, next week, Eric Mann, me, the host, I'm going to do a show around my experience in the communist movement from 1975 to 1984, when I joined two communist organizations in sequence, the August 29th Movement, followed by the League of Revolutionary Struggle, why I chose to join them, why I became a communist, why I think overall it was an excellent experience that moved my life forward, what I learned from it. I'm going to tell you a lot of stories about my actual work in the GM Van Nuys plant as an open communist and the experience I had with 5,000 auto workers and how they perceived me as a communist and, more importantly, how we kept the GM Van Nuys plant open for 10 years. And I'll have some summary statements about what I think were both the achievements and some of the internal contradictions and weaknesses of the communist movement. And I'll have, I think, some disagreements with Max Elbaum's book, Revolution in the Air, which I think is too dismissive of the entire new communist movement and in particular does not highlight the role of the League of Revolutionary Struggle, which I think was the most successful by far experiment in the new communist movement. So, to be continued. Then, the week after next, we're going to have an entire hour with John Bachtel, the chair of the Communist Party USA. I got a very nice email because last week, if our listeners are still here, we had a great talk about pro-communist films, in particular the film Neruda and the film Il Postino, which was also about Pablo Neruda. It was all about, for those of you who missed it or those of you who want a refresher, the positive role that film can play in portraying communists in a positive manner. And then I got an email from someone who said she's a representative. She said, did I hear you speaking positively about communism? I'm with the CPUSA, and would you like to have John Bachtel, who's going to be in L.A. that week, on your show? I wrote back, absolutely, we'd love to have John on. And so we're going to spend a full hour in conversation with him. I'm going to give my own interpretation briefly of the overall very positive history of the CPUSA. Obviously, he will do the same since it's his organization. Not the same analysis, but he will give his own overview. And then mainly it'll be after I've done some framing, so you see where I'm coming from, it'll be a lot letting him lay out his ideas as clearly as possible and give him room to really stretch out. And then, of course, I will engage his point of view. And we may go to the phones at the end. In fact, let's go to the phones at the end of that show as well. All right. In fact, we always go to the phones. I have to remember that. That's what we do on Voices from the Frontlines. Mary at the front desk said, you're one of the few shows that do that. And I said, well, we're not going to the phones. I don't know who's out there. I don't know. I can't understand the show if I can't understand our listeners. So, yes, you'll be on the air today. Usually at the same time at the 3:40 slot where we talk for the first 35 or 40 minutes and then we have the last 20 minutes at 818-985-5735. All right, so what we're going to do now, so what is the main purpose of today's show, class? To talk about the struggle in front of the MTA in the context of the black struggle for freedom in Los Angeles, in particular the Watts Rebellion in 1965 and the L.A. Urban Rebellion, the Rodney King Rebellion of 1992. Okay? So let me just get a little water and I will talk to you. I mean, I think that the thing that's very tragic about this whole story is that, you know, that I believe the first black slave came to the United States in 1619. And Barack Obama talks about the concept of a more perfect union, which was comes from, I think, not the Declaration of Independence, but something from our founding fathers. And the concept was, well, not everything is right, but the United States will continue to move to being a more perfect union. So the way Obama says it, you know, at one point we had slavery, but we got rid of slavery. And then at one point women couldn't vote, but then women got the right to vote. And it does give you a sense of, you know, okay, not bad, not bad. All right, it may take a while, but, you know, I get it that this is a perfectible country. But what if it's not true? And what if, in fact, the system has had no internal capacity for reform, let alone revolution? It's been a reactionary country from the beginning. There have been waves of mass struggle. The system has reformed, meaning, that's an interesting word, it has reformed itself temporarily, or you could say shift-shaped itself. It didn't really change. It tried to change. It has no inherent capacity. But worse than that, it has a tremendous capacity for counter-revolution. So it moves, it accepts change under tremendous pressure, and then it moves to kill the revolutionaries, beat back the movement, and reestablish terrible policies. So let's look at you know, you want to speak, say something on that?
Nope, nope. That's absolutely right. They reform itself. Sorry. You can say that you don't have slavery, but the fact is there's still 1 million black people in prison today. And in the prison system, there are 2.5 million prisoners in all of the United States, right? And let's not even talk about the labor that they have to do for, what, 25 cents an hour or something like that, right? That is slavery on its face.
So the particular things we're trying to talk about now in Los Angeles, go back to our six demands, is that in 1965, when black people rebelled, they had a thing called the McCone Commission. And a guy named John McCone, who it turns out I just checked it out, he used to be the head of the CIA. He was brought in by Governor Edmund Brown, who was a very liberal guy, for a capitalist Democrat. And they were trying to figure out, what can we do for black people? So they had reforms. And I looked at what they had under transportation. How terribly weak. This is 1965. A public subsidy in one form or another to give the Southern California Rapid Transit District, which is the bus system, financial ability to provide an adequate and reasonable bus transportation system throughout the metropolitan area. So the first question is, why didn't RTD already provide that for black people? It said in the McCone Commission that the transportation system actually fosters segregation, that people in Watts could not get to jobs throughout L.A. because people didn't really want them to get jobs throughout L.A. So compare those to the establishment of transfer privileges in order to minimize transportation costs. With respect to the Watts area in particular, immediate establishment of an adequate east-west crosstown service, as well as increasing the north-south service to permit efficient transportation to and from the area. What they meant was that people in Watts were trapped in Watts. There wasn't good east-west service or north-south service. Well, I think those are the only four directions I know. So basically what they were saying is that people in Watts were trapped in Watts. Now, today, people in South L.A. are trapped in many, many different ways. So let's go back to our six demands, okay? All right, the first thing is free public transportation. One reason people are trapped is because they can't afford the bus pass. The bus pass is now $100. So I wrote here in the second part of it, it says free public transportation is so obvious, it's revolutionary. The MTA is one of the richest public agencies in the world, with a $5 billion a year budget about to become $7 billion through its latest sales tax. Now, four sales tax that all of us pay. So first, free public transportation is not actually free, but already paid for over and over and over by the taxpayers. Second, LA is a city of great poverty and a nation of great spiritual and economic poverty. The MTA's 500,000 daily passengers, 20% black, 55% Latino, 60% women, and more than 60% extreme low income, cannot afford the $100 a month bus pass, nor the $24 a month student pass. For many families making no more than $20,000 a year, their monthly bus costs are more than $200 a month. MTA ridership is down because of poor service, high fares, police brutality, and long waits. If we had free public transportation, MTA daily ridership might reach 1 million people riding a day, doubling, and with dramatic reduction in auto use. Also, it would obviously end police brutality and harassment, at least in the fare collection process, because no fare leads to no fare collection. So the first thing I'm asking our listeners is, are you willing to work with us to get free public transportation in Los Angeles? Right now, the fares are $100, which is obscene. But the problem is, are you willing to take on Eric Garcetti? And are you ready to read this one here, this thing that says, stop MTA and black ridership?
That is, yeah. You know, my first reaction when you just said that is that that's right. As if you were, like, saying it, I'm, like, in church saying, that's right.
Well, thank you. Preacher, thank you, brother.
The Stop MTA Attacks on Black Writers Support the Strategy Center's civil rights complaint in front of the U.S. Department of Transportation. The Strategy Center has submitted a civil rights complaint to the United States Department of Transportation Civil Rights Department, charging the MTA with egregious racial discrimination and animus inflicted on black train and bus riders. The MTA both issues tickets and citations for fare evasion and used both ticket collections and, in the past, sheriffs to collect fares and punish riders for non-payment. Of the 30,000 tickets issued in 2016 and 8,000 arrests, more than 50% went to black train and bus riders, even though black people are only 19% of all metro ridership. This extraordinary level of discrimination has led to DOT to accept the Strategy Center's complaint and begin its own independent investigation of MTA policies. We need you to support our work and express your outrage to the MTA for this systematic anti-black racism.
So I think that obviously if Donald Trump did this, a lot of you would be very upset. But unfortunately, this was carried out by Mark Ridley Thomas and by Eric Garcetti, Sheila Kuehl, Hilda Solis. You know, the liberal establishment, along with the black CEO, Philip Washington, we are having trouble getting community groups to pressure the mayor and say, are you really, again, under investigation for civil rights violations from the Strategy Center? The Department of Transportation is investigating you. I think that you have to understand that the MTA's attitude is we don't really care. I mean, they'll investigate us. What are they going to do to us? Well, they might take away our federal money. Not really. I mean, it's Trump. You know, these people are now under the Trump administration. We don't really think they're going to do it. If it was Obama, they would say, all right, so investigate us. We know Obama. We'll call Obama and tell him just call off the investigation as it gets closer. So I want to be very honest. It's a big thing. This is that they're being essentially found in probable cause of violating the rights of 100,000 black passengers. My question to you is, how upset are you and how much would you like to work on this campaign? So part one is the free public transportation. Part two is this investigation is important to us. I mean, it took us a lot of work. I don't know if you understand that these investigations, they're like mini court cases. We didn't just call the Department of Transportation and say, hey, would you like to investigate the MTA? We had to document it. We had to write like a 20-page brief. They investigated it enough to say they want to do an investigation. They do very few investigations, and there's some very decent people in the Department of Transportation who are just doing their job, but doing their job under difficult circumstances to investigate the MTA. My question is, will you help us put pressure on the MTA to say, you don't need to wait for the investigation. Stop arresting black people. Free public transportation. Cut your police budget in 50%. Start buying electric buses. Give a million hours back and stop harassing the Strategy Center for doing its job. So you don't need to wait for the investigation. I'm telling you that they're being investigated again. 818-985-5735. What do you want to do? We really need your help. Now, I'm going to get to a couple other points. When we had Cindy Mostyn on from the Standing Rock Indigenous Environmental Network, I said to the listeners, I don't really want to discuss what's right or wrong about Standing Rock. I hope we all understand that. Yeah, fighting the pipeline is right and the pipeline is wrong. But only call if you either have done something good for Standing Rock or you plan to do something good. To my amazement, 20 listeners called in and all had done wonderful. Some people had gone to Standing Rock. We think that's fantastic. The question is, would you go to South Central Los Angeles right now and help us? Very frankly, there's been not as much outpouring of support for the organizing work we've done in L.A. in the black community, and we need your help, okay? Standing Rock is great. Obviously, we did four straight shows on it. But now we're doing a show on trying to stop transit racism in L.A., and we really need your help. 818-985-5735. But you're not going to get on it for about 10 more minutes, but we do want to talk to you if you're interested.
Purchase 5,000 zero-emission electric buses. Stop the purchase of compressed natural gases. From 1996 to 2006, the Strategy Center was engaged in a court-ordered consent decree with the MTA based on our successful civil rights suit against them, represented by the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. In that campaign, we called on the MTA to get rid of diesel buses and move to the cleanest technology available at the time for buses, which were compressed natural gas buses. Thanks to the work of the Strategy Center and Bus Riders Union and a very progressive MTA CEO, Julian Burke, we were able to convince the MTA to get rid of 2,000 dirty, dilapidated diesel buses and replace them with 2,000 CNG buses. We also convinced the MTA to expand the bus fleet to 2,500 buses, thus purchasing another 500 CNG buses. But what was good environmental policy 15 years ago is bad policy today. CNG is a fossil fuel. It is brought out of the ground through fracking, and that in turn generates many air and water toxins. Also, its emissions are far greater than the electric buses. Let's use our movement to make climate justice and social justice the priority for the MTA bus purchases.
So let me explain what's going on with that. Kind of scary for me how long I've been around. That's why I work out every day and try to do this younger next year thing, because I got a lot of years to go. But it is chilling to me to realize that we began the Strategy Center's bus riders campaign in about 1990, and we took the MTA to court in 1994. In 1996, we signed a consent decree with them. Now, back then, the MTA had diesel buses, and we wanted to get rid of diesel buses. And we got the MTA through a long process to do what was called compressed natural gas buses. I was very proud of that. And they give always the arguments. They say, well, we can't do it. We have these fueling stations. They're going to be very expensive. We have diesel buses, but the new diesel buses are very good. We said, no, you're not getting diesel buses. You're getting compressed natural gas. We won the argument, and CNG has dramatically lower emissions than diesel. Okay, so far, so good. So then I was at a conference on the future transportation, and a brother from the Indigenous Environmental Network stood up and said, hey, look, do you know what CNG is? And I said, not exactly. And they said, it's a gas. It's on our reservations. And they drill on our reservations. It's got terrible emissions. And that's before I even knew what fracking was. And they said, look, it's okay if you got CNG compared to diesel, but you got to get rid of CNG. So I said, this is like an infinite, I was really proud of myself for a minute. And then I realized, okay, I get it. So here's the point. We're now not in 1996 or 2000, we're 2017. We can't continue CNG buses, but the gas company and the gas industry has given a lot of money to members of the MTA board. And they're a very powerful lobby, and they're going to say, you can't afford electric. Electric is very difficult to implement. It's very expensive. All the arguments they gave us about CNG. And Thursday, the 27th of April, which is a week from next Tuesday, so we're going to talk about it next Tuesday a lot, we'd love you to come with us to the MTA to say you support these demands, including telling the MTA, don't continue to buy compressed natural gas buses. Why? Because a bus has a life of 12 to 14 years. So once they replace this group of CNG buses with a new group, we'll have those buses on the road for 12 more years before they can be replaced, which means we can't get electric in there. So we are working with other groups, including the Sierra Club and several groups that we've had some struggle with, but they've responded very positively, and we're all going to go to the MTA on the 27th and say, look, we united in no further purchase of compressed natural gas buses, even if it means keeping these buses on the road for another year so you can go to get all ready to buy 1,000 electric buses. Are you reading me so far? So you got the free public transportation? Okay, you got that? You got no fare collection? Even if there's not, until it's not completely free, still no fare collection, no police involved in it, no transit court. Got that? Okay. Then cutting the MTA budget, police budget, by 50%, you got that, because this is all brand new. They just voted the $797 million, I'm sorry, which is almost $1 billion, 0.8 billion dollars, for a whole new police state on the buses. Now let's get to the issue of restoring the 1 million hours in Cuthbert bus service. The voice you're hearing is Channing Martinez. You're on 818-985-5735. Okay?
I mean, it's just as you were saying earlier, it's the system. You win something, the system takes it back right away. And so we won something, and the system has taken it back right away, right? We lost 1 million hours of bus service. So our demand is restore 1 million hours of cut service that the Strategy Center won and the MTA cut in a racist and punitive manner. The Strategy Center won 1 million hours of additional service through our consent decree to dramatically reduce overcrowding and increase how frequency the buses arrived. As soon as the consent decree expired, Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa moved to cut that service. The result was that passengers wait longer, and longer times and trips to work and school are unbearably long. We had no success in getting the MTA board of Mayor Eric Garcetti to restore their urgency needed service. We need your help to win this demand.
818-985-5735. Now, I don't know how many people here ride the bus. And don't call up and tell me you're having a bad time on the bus. Tell me you're going to get involved in the movement and how you're going to help us. But one of the things about bus service is that it's really great if it comes frequently. And one of the things about the MTA that I learned is that the more frequently the buses come, the more people ride it.
Oh, yeah.
So what happens is, and it's been proven, you start a line. And you put a lot of service on the line. At first, the buses don't have a lot of customers because you're putting a lot of buses and people are not used to that. But then the friends say, hey, guess what? I got a bus in 10 minutes. Oh, yeah? So then the next day you go out there and you bring your friends with you. And then all of a sudden you have a good experience and other people tell other people. And within 6 months to a year, that bus gets filled up. But the MTA, so we were successful in this. And the MTA was so angry at us because we succeeded under a federal civil rights act that as soon as these 10 years were up, they cut everything. And I have to say, on a very personal level, it's pretty disappointing, even depressing, because I'm going to get to the next one about the MTA's retaliation against the Strategy Center, 818-985-5735. Let me tell you about the retaliation, why is it like. I'm asking you a question. Why do you think that both Mayor Villaraigosa, who I knew and at one point was a close friend, by the way, Mayor Hahn, Mayor Garcetti, Mark Ridley Thomas, in particular, are so hostile to the Strategy Center? We didn't start out hostile to them. We didn't. We reached out to them. We talked to them. We said, come on, we need your help. Why do you think they would be so hostile? And certainly Sheila Kuehl is very hostile. Pam O'Connor, thank God she's off the board, hated the Strategy Center. Why do you think they dislike us so much? Especially how nice we are and how totally cool we are. Because liberals hate pressure from the left. I do tell the story that when Martin Luther King went to Chicago to bring the civil rights movement to the North, Black Democrats in Chicago said, get back on the bus and go back down south. we don't need you in Chicago. We're working with Mayor Daley, who was, by the way, one of the worst racists of all time. We don't need you to come and act like we are not doing the job. Because if you come in and say you're fighting for civil rights, said the black Democrats and said the white liberal Democrats, that means that we're not doing our job. So instead of welcoming King and saying we can't win housing for black people, we can't stop the police brutality, they told King to get out of town. Now, I don't think we're as good as Martin Luther King, but the point holds that liberals hate the civil rights movement, unfortunately. They don't like the civil rights movement, contrary to what you would believe. So King went to turn out to Cicero, Illinois, which is a white suburb, and they had a march against segregation, and the black Democrats said, good, go to Cicero, where all those white racists are. And King almost got killed because the mob was so severely racist. So it's a very depressing story that you would think that Mark Ridley Thomas and, yes, Jackie DuPont Walker and other people whose help we need would respond better, but so far they have not. Now, if you know Jackie DuPont Walker, and I do, she's a member of the board, if you know Mark Ridley Thomas, and I do for many, many years, if you know Mayor Garcetti or have any relationship, Sheila Kuehl, Hilda Solis, this isn't a personal fight. Say, I support the six demands. Now, can you repeat the six demands? 818-985-5735. You start chanting, what, pick a man. No, looking at the paper.
Okay. Free public transportation in Los Angeles, right? It's already paid for.
No, keep going. Next demand.
Somebody looks down.
No, can't look.
No police on public transportation, right? We want 5,000 zero-emission buses right now, right?
Right.
We want to stop the retaliation against the Strategy Center right now, right? We want to restore 1 million hours of bus service that we've been fighting for more than 10 years now, or right on 10 years now.
And we want to stop the attack on black passengers, and we want support for our civil rights consent decree, a civil rights case against the MTA, and we want to cut the MTA budget by 50%. Okay, so we got it pretty good. Me and Channing, we got the demands pretty good. Do you? And let me say one more thing, and then we'll go to the phones, 818-985-5735. Do you know what a comprehensive demands are? A comprehensive program, you know, like when you listen to the – and just stay for your Channing before you go on the phones. The Black Panther Party had a 10-point program, right? But they rarely put those programs together in a comprehensive actual campaign. So they had a thing about we want food for our people, we want housing, we want a plebiscite as to our relationship to the United States. They had great demands, and we want the police out of our community, we want the brothers out of jail. But what we're trying to do, which is pretty exciting, is take the 25th anniversary of the urban rebellion in our city, Los Angeles, and come up with a structural program. Think about it. Free public transportation could get 1 million people on public transportation and put $200 a month back into the pockets of low-income black, Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, and working-class white people in the city. $200 a month. Think about that. Imagine what it would be like to go on public transportation and not be afraid of the police, at least on the issue of fare collection, because there was no fare. And until there was completely no fare, there's no fare collection, okay? Then imagine that the police budget is cut by 50% and that money is put back into service and other things so you're not as afraid on the train. Then there's 1 million hours of service put back so you get better service. The buses, it's not just they're free, but pretty much they're running 24/7 and you're not waiting on the corner for the bus. That the MTA stops its discrimination of black riders. And the MTA stops being so hostile to the Strategy Center because the Strategy Center is frankly going to be pretty critical to whether or not we can win these campaigns. All right, sisters and brothers, you get the program. The question now is, on a scale from 1 to 10, how excited are you about it? And scale from 1 to 10, what are you going to do about it? Channing Martinez, the producer, is now going to go to the phones. I'd love to talk to you. 818-985-5735. David in Long Beach, what are you thinking? This is Eric Mann. Hello. You're on Voices from the Frontlines. David, what's up?
How are you? Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it very much.
What do you think about this campaign, and what role would you like to play in it?
Well, you know what? I just happened to stumble across your station, and I've never listened to your program before, and little intrigued. Your statistics that you were quoting earlier on the amount of arrest or fines or tickets that were handed out to African Americans, the percentages per travelers. Could you repeat those statistics again?
Sure. And by the way, if you go on our website,
Strategy Center?
Yeah, go on the Strategy Center website and go on the Fight for the Soul of the City site. It'll be up there. We got these.
Fair enough.
Well, I'm going to give them to you, though. We got these statistics from the MTA to give them credit. They did actually provide this under a Freedom of Information public records request. Black people are 19% of train and bus riders. We have figures that go back about 6 years. On every single category of arrests around the issue, first of fare evasion, black people are getting more than 50% of the tickets. That's an astronomical. I'm going to do a little on statistics in a minute. Secondly, black people are also 50% of the arrests, as well as tickets. Now, the arrests are not just for fare evasion. The arrests are from all these so-called quality of life issues that are the, broken windows theory. Chewing gum, I mean it, spitting on the sidewalk, open can. One person got a ticket for, bad odor. So it's basically criminalizing every single element of life for a black person. So those are the figures, and if you go on our site, we have all the actual charts that we got from the MTA. Thank you for calling.
My question to you is this.
Okay, sure.
How many lines are there in the MTA, and what you're giving me a stat on the actual arrest and the fines and the citations, but was this taken from a certain area or a certain region or a certain, I'm sure that you're pinning kind of African Americans against whites. And I'm wondering, did they survey all the lines? Did they survey just one region of the lines? How did that work?
All right. And then I'm going to take the rest of your question on off the air and go to the next call. I think it's very sad in this call. I think, I always respect the views of the callers, but it's a very strange thing. It's like, what percentage of black people, were lynched in the South compared to whites? Well, pretty much 100%. Well, why are you pitting them against whites? Why don't white people get outraged at how black people are treated? I mean, we've gone through this campaign after campaign. 65 to 70% of the students in the Los Angeles School District who got willful defiance tickets were young black boys. You know what willful defiance is? It's just acting out, being happy, jumping up and down. If a teacher says sit down, the kid says no. It's called willful defiance, and they were getting suspended and expelled for this, and we got that changed. But it took us 3 years, and then people would say, but I don't understand. Why are all the black kids getting the willful defiance? Then we had a campaign where black and Latino students were getting arrested on the way to school, and the white voice says, I'm very confused. Why are all the black and Latino kids getting arrested on the way to school? Because it's a racist country. Then we had a campaign to get rid of one tank, three grenade launchers, and 61 M16s. And the white and liberal and middle-class voice says, but I'm very confused. Why would they have a tank and an M16 in a school? And we say, to kill the kids. So we got to decide. I'm hoping some of our listeners are outraged on the surface and don't need to do a deep study on why the Department of Transportation, you see, it's interesting. I want to take this a minute. I just announced that the Department of Transportation has already accepted our charges against the MTA. So why would a listener call in and say, well, I'm just trying to almost like retry the case again? instead of saying, wow, if you were indicted by the Department of Transportation, it doesn't mean yet you're convicted. It means that they're choosing to be a major investigation. It just shows the difficulty, again, of doing this organizing work, folks. For those of you who are outraged about it, I hope you do call, and I hope you get involved in the campaign. I understood the legitimacy of the question. I tried to answer it the best I could. 818-985-5735. Is it Lawrence from Huntington Park?
Yeah. I wanted to tell you, I was listening to you talk about the bus, but I would also like to say, you know, they have an SS services, you know, and then people leave you stranded. And I'm an African-American person, and they will leave you stranded, and whoever was supposed to come to get you will call somebody and tell them that I am the one that's a no-show, and you're still waiting for the ride. And when you try to communicate with the people that work for SS, where's the ride? The person that answers the phone say somebody, the driver, told them you're a no-show, and yet you're still waiting for them. And then you have to explain, well, where did the driver come to? He never came to make contact with me. Oh, this happened so much with SS. And I went all the way to El Monte to the SS building. And he said, well, you can't come in here because we don't do no talking to people. I say, somebody needs to talk to somebody face to face because you can't keep leaving people stranded and you can't communicate with anybody. And I would like to hear you talk about that because it's part of the transportation. And now I would like to know, how can you bring SS services to the court to sue them for leaving you stranded in the hot sun, you know, plus the city bus, you know, they have a handicap, but they have just one little small area for handicapped people. And if you get on there with a wheelchair and it's already some, then you got to sit at a corner for 2 and 3, 25, 30 minutes. And if the bus is still full and the people don't want to move, the person with the disability can't get on the bus. So either they need to have a whole bus for handicapped people, or they need to make it a law to say if the handicapped spot is filled with people who ain't handicapped, they need to find the people tickets so they can move away to give up the seat, because the bus company evidently don't realize there's a lot of people with handicap and only four people can't get on. There's more than four. There's only enough room for four handicapped people. If the people don't want to move out the area, then the person with the disability in the wheelchair has to stay out on the corner. The driver say, I'm sorry, I can't make a move. And he keeps on going. So you're left standing out there on the corner. So something, it's all good to hear you. I'm glad I'm listening. But they need to do something about this, too, because I've been left stranded by SS three times. And believe me, I like to have a heart attack trying to get a ride to come to get me. It makes you crazy. You wonder what the people, what's going on? You say the driver came and told you I'm a no-show and I'm still waiting, and the person answered the phone.
Brother, I think it's really great what you say. I just want to respond a little bit. So the first thing is that, yeah, we have a lot of members. Thank you very much. The point, I want to just stay on your point. I'm not moving away. The services you're talking about, there is a program that the MTA has, public transportation has, where you can call ahead. Usually, sometimes you need 24 hours notice for it. And we have several of them, of the leaders of the Strategy Center, are people who are disabled, who are in wheelchairs, right, and who go to the meetings in wheelchairs. They do ride public transportation in wheelchairs. Their whole story, which is what this brother was pointing out, is at times very rough. His point is that there are not that many seats on the bus for people in wheelchairs, and as apparently what he's explaining is if there are not enough, they have to pass you by and wait. So I'm going to look into that. I really will, and I'm going to try to learn more. I'm going to talk to both Shepard Pettit and Beverly Taylor, who are regular riders, to learn more, and we're going to bring it back onto Voices from the Frontlines, I promise, as well as the special services, buses, and learn more about that. So is that okay? Does that address your concern? And I promise that in a subsequent show, if you call us at 213-387-2800, Yeah. Leave a message, and we'll call you back, and we'll get you the information that you want.
Thank you.
All right. No, thank you, and I'm very sorry for the experience. It's not that unique, but thank you. You're on with Eric Mann on Voices from the Frontlines. 818-985-5735. Is it Pam from View Park? Or is it Sam? Hey, Sam, how you doing?
Hey, Eric, how you doing? Look, let me ask you a question. How is the board elected or appointed? Are they appointed, the MTA board?
The board is appointed. Let me put it this way. Most of the people on the board are elected officials who got elected to something else. For instance, all five members of the County Board of Supervisors get a seat on the MTA board. So that is Sheila Kuehl, Mark Willie Thomas, now Janice Hahn, Hilda Solis, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the fifth supervisor's name. Then Mayor Garcetti has four seats on the board. He's appointed a guy named Mike Bonin. He's appointed Jackie DuPont Walker himself. That's three. And I don't remember his fourth. Then the League of City has four votes, including Butts, who is, I believe, the mayor of Inglewood. So there are four usually mayors. So they are people that are generally elected, but they're elected to something else. And based on being elected to something else, they get to sit on this board, which gives them control of $7 billion. Go ahead.
Well, that's the problem. And I have to ask you that question because, looking at some of these politicians that have been recycled over and over and over again, they're not doing anything for anyone, some of them are not. And if they're sitting on that board, you know, this is a battle that, I don't understand how we can work this where we can get some public representation, some citizen representation, because that's not citizen representation there.
That's not.
Political representation. And if we don't come up with a method by which we have citizen representation, we're up against a wall with these politicians that's been in office and stuck in office and they're not doing anything for us in the first place, some of them. I'm not knocking it, but I'm just saying it like it is. Wrigley Thomas never did anything over in Crenshaw for the system, the subway system that's coming through to make sure African Americans were hired. He didn't raise his voice. His son isn't doing anything. And we got these cronies that are in office, and we're trying to fight these cronies. You can't fight them. How can you fight them?
Well, I'm the director of something called the Labor Community Strategy Center. I'm a pretty experienced organizer. I have to admit that I don't know. I mean, how's that for an answer? I've been fighting them for 25 years. Sam, let me ask you this. If you would send me an email, though, at eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com, I'd like to get in touch with you, and maybe at least you could come to some meetings and bring your wisdom and some of that anger, because I'll be honest with you, if the community does not organize around these demands, I don't know how we can win, okay? So
give me that again off there.
It's Eric, okay? And listen to everybody, eric@voicesfromthefrontlines.com. Sam, I'd love to hear from you, okay?
Thanks so much.
All right, Noah in L.A., I'd love to hear from you. 818-985-5735, you're on KPFK. With Eric Mann and Channing Martinez from the Strategy Center, what can I do for you? 3 minutes.
Man, Mr. Martinez, thank you for your time.
Sure.
I live in Councilman Barnes District, Council District 1, Deputy Council District 11. And I ride the bus, and when the stories I just heard, it may sound shocking to me, but I feel like we're being too soft on public employees. You know, the two previous callers gave some pretty harsh testimony about misconduct and lack of representation by public employees. For example, my city councilman, Mike Bonin, who sits on the board, appointed by Eric Garcetti.
Right.
But maybe, I guess I should email you and we can follow up and so on. But some idea about 2 years ago came together, thinking in that side of town, the west side of town where I live, was maybe kind of be a little harder on our public employees than to focus on their 9-to-5 or for bus drivers, whatever their schedule is. When they get home at the end of the day, they get a letter in the mail every month updating them on their pension. And you know as well as I do, the tension is under attack from every direction and sideways. But one direction that hasn't felt the heat is from us, hasn't felt it from community organizers like you, Mr. Mann, Mr. Martinez, hasn't felt the heat from me, from, you know, from people in my neck of the woods. Last I saw, the numbers move around a little bit, but in August last year, the MTA bus drivers, as part of the California Public Employee Retirement System, have $350 billion in their retirement system. 10% of it is invested in real estate. That's $35 billion last
right.
time I looked.
Right.
That's money that, in principle, can be going to revitalizing the soul of the city, getting some kind of development in Koreatown near where the Strategy Center is located so you can have some parks without kicking out the people who are working for a living. Something on the west side, we can get some kind of affordable housing. You know,
okay, listen, I'm going to have to stop. This is very good. Let me ask you this. You sound great, and I mean it. We don't want to go after people's pensions, but we can talk about that. If you could send me an email, because Mike Bonin is a pretty, you know, on some surface, he's been a decent guy, but he doesn't do the right thing. So if you're in his district, and we could call you, Eric, at voicesfromthefrontlines.com, Eric at voicesfromthefrontlines.com. I'd love to continue talking to you, and we could get a group of people in his district. We could organize a meeting and sit down with him around this program. That would mean a lot to us, okay? That could really help.
Add one small thing, which is, I don't mean to go after the pension, and to ask the public employees, like the previous.
Wait, I'm sorry. They're going to make us get off the air. So you're right at the end of the show, okay, brother?
Ask the public employees to invest.
All right.
Invest in us.
I get it. Well, listen, Nina Simone is saying that we're going to do it my way, her way, Frank Sinatra's way, Elvis Presley's way, and even Eric Mann's way. And thanks a lot for being on Voices from the Front Lines. Thank you, Channing Martinez, with whom I work very closely, and without him, we don't have this show. We need you to get involved in this campaign. Eric at voicesfromthefrontlines.com. Thank you to G. Thank you to KPFK. Next week and the week after, we're going to have a sort of a introspection about the role of communism in the movement. Take good care of yourselves, and all power to the people.
I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did.